Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello out there, and welcome to Spirit Therapy. We're talking about what makes a champion, and I'm going to set the tone with a little Curtis Mayfield, "We're a Winner." That is just groovy. Welcome, Jerome. Well, tonight we have Jerome Dorsey, the Ironman contender and veteran and champion and all kinds of awesome-like qualities joining us tonight. Welcome, Jerome. Say hi to the people, please.
Hey, thank you, Nikhil. Hello, everyone out there. This is Jerome Dorsey. I never knew how significant that song was when I was a kid. I just knew I liked it. But I'm from the Philadelphia area, and I've always been an Ironman or champion, and it just started from day one. And I work as a physician in surgery, and I like to stay active.
Awesome. That's great. I was looking for a motivational song, and you know, a lot of times it's like the same, which are great, the orchestral, you know, moving sort of gladiator. So, but instead, I didn't see anything that stuck out that you hadn't heard before. I went through some of my songs and came across the "We're a Winner," and I was like, this is perfect, because it's kind of like an everyday kind of I can do this with that champion attitude sprinkled on top with Curtis's beautiful voice. So I thought that really set the tone for what we're talking about here. Because how long have you been at the Ironman game?
Well, I started doing the actual sport of triathlon man back in 2001. I had previously done two sprint distance races back in 1985, just for charity, for a bicycle. I could run and I could swim, and I just went out there for Cancer Society, did a couple of races and did really well. But since 2000, I've been really hard on the road to that event.
Wow.
And
so
I really love the sport.
So like 13 years now, you've been in this Ironman mindset. What made you decide to do it in the first place? How did that happen?
I had promised myself that by the time I was 45 that I would do an Ironman. Before that, I ran marathons any distance. In college, my coach even threw me in the 220, and which was foreign to me because I've always been a distance runner. But I thought, you know, when I hit about 45, I would just go do an Ironman. And,
good plan.
When I turned 45, I was a little bit thrown off because it took more to do the Ironman than I wanted to do. I wanted to do the World Championship, which was Hawaii. And I started my quest to Hawaii, and I did make it. But even before that, I had that spirit to keep on moving, keep on making waves so that I could have a good life, because I had a lot of insanity in my life, and my escape, also my fortune, was to run, to swim, to ride, to dance, and it's made a real, real significant path for my life, and
wow.
I think that's all part of being an Ironman.
Wow, interesting. So it was like your release, your oasis, your place where you could create what the vibration that you wanted to be in, and physically. How did that, would that come as a teenager? Did you always have that feeling in you? Yeah.
Yeah, it came before I was a teenager. I'm number 10 out of 11 kids. And my mom had plopped in everybody in my neighborhood, pretty much. I can't say everyone because I remember a couple of families that weren't involved, but most people in my neighborhood, they drank a lot, smoked a lot, didn't make much money. We all lived in apartments. And it was just kind of difficult, and I would look at them. I remember vividly at the age of about 6, looking at people around me thinking, I can't do this. I just cannot do this. And I got my first release by swimming. They thought that kids in my neighborhood couldn't swim. So they started this program at school to teach us how to swim. Me saying us, I mean African-Americans. And this was back in the 50s.
Wow.
And we found out that we could swim. I was almost a natural. They threw me in the water and taught me a few strokes. And
you were off.
I kind of pushed it. I found that when I did that I felt better about my life and that I could put things, even at that age, a little more in perspective, as much as a 10-year-old or a 9-year-old could do. I started trying to finagle ways to make my life better.
Mm.
And then that led to like horses, riding horses and running and playing speed games in the park, you know, with my friends. We were running long distances when we were 11 and 12, but didn't even know it because we were playing games.
Right.
Yeah,
nobody's counting the miles.
Exactly. So I was fortunate, and I don't think that I'm esoteric or anything, but I think that all of us have something inside of us that can be created from movement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we get that space in our head. I think it's interesting when you think about how you understood things as a child. You know, to me, and let me know if you agree, it's like you kind of feel a vibration very generally, but strongly, because you don't have all these details in your head. So then when you find something that you're just like, yeah, this feels good, I want to do more of this, and then you just do more of that instead of asking
exactly
ourselves all kinds of questions, right?
Exactly. That's where I fell in.
Wow.
I also noticed something that was pretty important to me, too, because I lived, everywhere I lived at that time, all you could see was asphalt until you cross this one big street, and then there was a huge park, Fairmont Park. But I noticed when we would drive away from that area to areas that was countryside and green and hilly, I automatically, and I'm not making this up, I automatically felt a huge weight lifted off of my chest. Mm-hmm. And I started to think a little more clearly there. That's where I started to run the countryside and started really finding peace in what I was doing and wanting to take that extra step and wanting to do more in that arena of running and swimming and riding horses and things like that. Turn made me a better student, made me a better person in my neighborhood or wherever I went.
Wow. That release you got, you found that release and then the clearing. And then it's just more shining, more light, right, that can come through. And look at that. It affected everything in a positive way.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I really know that this happened because I took some time off from doing these things and did some things that weren't so healthy, and I saw the difference.
Mm.
It was vivid.
Mm-hmm.
Vivid. I needed to get back to where
wow.
I belong. Doing these
yeah.
things.
That's a great thing we can do for ourselves, right? I mean, if you don't know, well, try something. You'll know whether you like it or not or whether it works out or not. And then try something else and see if that's better. And you'll know if it's not or it is, like, instantly.
Right. Right.
Yeah. To keep it moving. And also, you had that wonderful grounding, like, with the fact that you're going into nature. You're, you know, basically pounding the earth. You know, you're connecting your grounding center. And then, of course, with horses, I mean, that's one of my favorite. I mean, I have dreams. I'm a horse lover, but also that sense of riding a horse, that freedom that you feel and that power that you feel underneath you. And you also need to have a conversation with the horse. There needs to be some sort of
exactly.
connection there. So I think, and let me know if you agree, that that connection that we find with the horse is the same connection that we can connect with our own bodies. And what is that conversation? That was one of the questions I was going to ask you is, you know, what's your conversation with your body being an Iron Man, you know?
Just like with the horses, I had the good fortune of coming from a really, really poor family and ended up riding million-dollar horses. And
wow.
I took care of them, and I ended up riding them, and I ended up having some of my own. But the conversation with the horse and me becoming one, when I got on that horse could feel my hands and my legs and hear my voice, and he knew what I wanted when I got on his back. And then to take that and translate it to how I beat the road with triathlon was an amazing transition because I didn't have that huge, powerful animal under me. I had 159 pounds of me under me. And
yeah.
I had, if I start out quickly and didn't listen to my body, the conversation would be, okay, Jerome, you're pushing a little too hard. You're not going to make it pushing like that. But as soon as I would go into that, I would have this conversation with myself and I would make the change that was necessary for me to make, which slowed my heart rate down, which took my mind off of whatever pain that I was going through, and then it added peace. And then I could truck along, keep my heart rate where it belonged. The conversation was, I'm happy with this. I can do this. It's not that far. It's just one more step. And each time that happened, before I started having a lot of injuries, when I slowed down my thought process, the faster I went. When I rushed it and went out there thinking, I'm going to go out there and beat this 20-year-old or this 35-year-old, which I did beat most of 20, 35-year-olds. But when I went out there thinking that, and I was all charged up and revved up and moving too fast, my body talked to me. And it was up to me to listen to it and pay attention and then go through with the run. And that's 140 miles, the Ironman.
That's a lot of talking. A lot of time for talk.
there's a lot of time out there. And there's a lot of times where you feel like you're defeated, but behind, around every corner, there's a change. And I just settled in for the change. That's where the peace comes in.
Wow. So it's true. There really is. It around every corner is hope and good stuff.
Exactly.
Nice.
It really is. It's just too bad some people can't wait to get around the corner. And I'm grateful that I can wait to get around the corner.
Talk about that a little bit. What does that mean to be able to wait? I know what you're saying. Tell me.
You get pushed against the wall and that you can get stuck there and kind of freeze up and not take a risk to go any further. Mm. And that's the time to make the move.
Mm.
I've had several occasions, a lot of occasions in life where I was at that point where I was afraid to go around that corner. But as soon as I got a glimmer of hope and made the turn around that corner, that thing that I was afraid of wasn't as big or as bad as I thought it was.
It never is it?
No, those gates weren't as high or the locks weren't as strong as I thought they were. It was me holding me back. And don't get me wrong, I know there's something else out there that's helping me along.
Sure.
I'm not doing this all by myself.
Sure.
But just the fact that I'm able to get around and take that chance and open up that door makes it possible for me to do a lot of things.
Interesting. So it sounds like it's your... Also, then that moment, it's your conversation with fear, right? That where you don't want to go around the corner, you don't want to make that, or you think you're about to give up. Also kind of coupled with doubt, would you say? Like,
right. Yeah.
That moment of questioning yourself.
And that comes up. We're human. We have those characteristics, just like we have the good ones, we have the bad ones. And, it's easy to sit back and not let something good happen to yourself, like not finishing a race or not finishing your homework or not finishing a job or not doing a job well. It's easy to do that, but it takes brass, and this goes for everybody as far as I can see. It takes brass to take the step and get around the corner, and it really becomes easier than sitting back. But initially, it seems like sitting back is the easy way to go.
Mm-hmm. And it's like you got to get through that threshold.
Right. And I think most of us want to live good lives. There are people who don't want to live good lives, but I think most people do want to live good lives. And, and that, to me, doesn't mean having a whole lot of money and access to anything you want. It's having yourself. It's having peace and the ability to be human. That's where my strength is. At least I think it is. I could be fooling myself, but I think those are my strengths.
Yeah, I think I would say that that's where the power comes from, for sure, when you can have that inner peace, that inner calm. And I want to get into that, too, like, you know, because, you know, even when you look at what's happening in the world right now, we have this whole revolution of us standing up for ourselves and looking to have the life that we all deserve, that happiness that I agree we all definitely want. And then at the same time, you know, we've got a lot of fight and protest, fight on both sides. And then when you think about an athlete or any kind of physical, you know, there is some sort of fight. There is some sort of, come on, give me 10 more. You know, you have to have that in there too. So the balance between that and the inner calm, I think, is what we're looking for individually, whether you're competing in anything physically or not, as well as the world is looking for that. You know, how do we accomplish what we want with enough force, but without being aggressive, you know? So
I think I do know what you're saying. With the athletics, it's funny that you would say, give me 10 more. Every time I go out and I want to cut something short, a couple of laps or by a half mile or something like that, something else rises up inside of me and it says, come on, Trump, let's go 5 more laps than what you started out. Come on. Hey, you can ride another 3 miles. I have gotten in trouble with the time of day. I would be out and knowing that I should get myself back to the house, but that voice would come up and say, Jerome, you got a big race coming. You want to be prepared. Ride a few more miles. And the next thing you know, I'm riding a few more miles, and by the time I get home, I'm just making it before it's pitch black or something like that. And I feel great about it, but it's there all the time. Then to carry it over to my everyday living or my job, I spend more time at work than I do anywhere. And that's not by design in a way, but it is by design because I chose that job. That's why I can't be angry at anyone when I work all day and then I get called into the hospital and have to work all night and then I have to work the next day and then I'm trying to fit a workout in. But if I'm too tired, I learn not to work out, which I didn't 10 years ago. What happens is when I wanted to become a physician's assistant, all of my sporting activities was a part of me becoming a physician assistant. I waited until I was 38 to go back to school for that. And I carried that same attitude to my work as I did to the road. And because I had kids, I tried to work for school. You're not supposed to do that, but I did. I would go into school like 3 o'clock in the morning because I was a better study at 3 o'clock in the morning when no one is around. And I would go to a chalkboard, and I knew I was ready for an exam when I could go to that board without my notes and my paper and write down what was expected of me. And the only thing that told me to go do that was that same voice that told me to go out there and be a champion in my swimming, in my running, in my biking.
Wow.
And it's all intertwined with me. And I hope people don't think that I mean being a champion is to go out and be number one across the line. There are other ways to measure being a champion, like getting there as fast as I can and enjoying the people after the race, not getting there and being so beat up that they have to be carried away. It's about being as fast as I can and still having me when I get across that line.
Wow, yeah. Karen, you with you the whole time. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then I think that I get some pretty decent times. You know, I'm right up there with the top guys in my age groups. And, you know, I'm happy with that. And sure, I'd like to beat them all, but not on the terms of killing myself, because, you know, it's, you can drive yourself. And you, if you don't, if I don't listen to myself, I can create problems. I had an issue with my health that set me out for about 4 years. It didn't really stop me from racing, but it stopped me from racing at the level that I wanted to. But I still managed to get out there and race a decent race a couple of times a year instead of 8 or 10 times a year.
Mm.
And I didn't listen to my body when this was happening. I listened to it, but I refused to obey it because I was striving for, you know, a trip to Hawaii. And all the Ironmen out there know what I'm talking about. When you get your nose open to win a slot to go to Hawaii, there aren't many things that can come in between you and that goal. And when I was trying to make it there, I felt myself becoming sick, but I was so in tune to doing that, doing extra this, extra that, not 5 or 10 extra, but I was going over top. I was doing 10 or 15 or 20 or more than what I should be doing. And, you know, that kind of set me back a little bit. I made it and all, but I did get hurt out of the deal.
Mm. Interesting, because it seems that inner voice, that inner cheerleader, that inner, you know, motivational speaker, the one that says to give me 10 more, also is the one that goes, how about we don't? I think maybe this is too much. You know, I think that's
yeah.
the same voice. And I think it's interesting what happens when you listen to it and when you don't listen to it. I mean, that's a lot of what this show and Spirit Therapy is about finding, you know, how to talk to yourself and what to listen to that's going on in your head. I mean, who's got the real deal going on here, you know, or am I just, is it a door-to-door salesman that's going to sell me, you know, another vacuum cleaner? Like, is that what's happening? So who is that voice and how do you know it's that voice? I think we all kind of just know. But what is that voice to you? How do you identify that voice?
I hear it. I feel it. And it's a little hard to identify. It puts me in a place where when I'm hearing it say, okay, you can go 5 more, and that'll be okay. It's one feeling. But when I get to 5 more, and then I tell myself without the voice, I'm going to go another 5 more, I start getting signals to shut it down.
Mm.
And I do shut it down now. I do shut it down now. But when I was on that quest, I couldn't shut it. I didn't want to shut it down. All I could think about was, okay, I hear it. I feel something a little bit different here, but I'm going to push past it. And I was breaking down walls there, and I just pushed myself to the edge a little bit. And with
right.
my family, with my family history and everything, with hypertension and things like that, it just created a problem for me.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a learned thing, that conversation with yourself, and I think that comes with some age, a few years under your belt. You know, you learn to. I think it's any relationship that you either can communicate well or not, and any kind of communication takes some time to figure out. And especially with that age, that was also one of the questions I was going to ask you is. I believe that age is just an idea and a concept and a way of ticking off time on a calendar. But I think that we've learned to sort of accept the fact that we age and that everybody's doing it. So I guess when I get to this age, then I'm old, you know, like everybody's got their idea for what that is. But I don't really agree with that. I was lucky enough to have a father that taught me that age is a choice. And obviously you know, have transcended that. And just the way that you talk to yourself, you can see. And then you also have found these things with a better conversation with yourself, listening to yourself older. So can you talk a little bit about, like, you know, what is age to you and what are its strengths and weaknesses? How about that?
Yes, I agree with you. I do think that age is a chronological number. We just go through these numbers, and the way we feel about them is a choice. It's a good example to see men in their late 40s and 50s, quite a few men, and I'm not going to say all or most of all, I'm just going to say quite a few men will start having pot bellies, and they will start wearing their clothes a certain way, and the wives will start wearing certain types of dress, just this very, even though it's 30 years later, the same as their mothers did, and people start to transcend and take on that same, it's like they morph into who their parents were because this is what was set before them. I just don't agree with it. I don't agree with it. I'm 60 now, and I still do things as quickly as the 20 and 30-year-olds. I try to, without even breaking my neck, you know, I don't go out of the way, but I inherently dress like I'm younger than what people say you should dress at 60. I just do things that make me feel good. And doing a lot of running, swimming, riding, and hanging out with my girlfriend, and walking the dogs, and going to the movies, and once in a while going to a dance. And I'd like to go to more dances. I just don't really want to stay up too late. And getting around, seeing new things, and hiking, and just so
enjoying
many things that I like. It's just my life. So I was with a bunch of older people today. Right now, we're vacationing in South Carolina, and everybody I look at down here, they're retired. They're a couple years older than me, but we're doing totally different things. And I've had conversations with people today, which was wonderful. And they don't think that I'm as old as I am. They think that I'm a lot younger. And that's not because I run up there with my pants hanging off me and I got a tank top shirt on or anything like that. It's just that I just move like I'm a young person. That's the way I feel.
Mm.
I feel that sometimes I wake up in the morning and I can't say I feel old, but, you know, I have some aches and pains. Guaranteed, every single day when I wake up and I think, oh, this feels crappy, all I have to do, walk to the bathroom, brush my teeth, take a shower, and I feel just like I did in the middle of the last day. I don't feel like I've, this goes back 30 years. I don't feel like I've progressed in age 30 years. I don't. But sometimes I need a little bit of help. I need to brush my teeth and take a shower.
Yeah, I mean, I think I can't remember a time in my life at any age where it was just a period of physical perfectness, that nothing ached or whatever. Because even when you're a kid, you know, you're doing certain sports, you're learning different things, you're going dancing, you're running around with your friends. Something is bound to get banged around. And
right.
It's just going to happen. And I've found in my life that the older I get, what we were just talking about, that conversation and that communication with your own body is just so much greater, that I can get so much more done, and it's much more enjoyable because the enjoyability of it is more important to me now. Before, it was more like brute force, just rah, you know, come on, you want to be, right. You want to wear those jeans, you know, then work it out.
Right.
But after a while, that gets tiring. You know, you're just like, come on, man. So, yeah, listening to that voice. And I think everybody wakes up with aches and pains at any age. But if you're going to blame it on age and you're going to go, oh, this is because I'm 45 or 85 or whatever you are, then that's what it is going to be about. But it's not, unless you say it is. That's what I think.
I think Henry Ford said it, if you think you can, you can. If you think you are, then you are. And I believe that. You know, there does come a time when your system shuts down for whatever reason and you can't do some things. There are times for that. But on a normal day, when you think you can, you can. But if you think you can't, you can't. That works in my life.
Yeah.
And
I use that one a lot, too.
Yeah. When I was swimming as a kid, going back to this age thing, and I was trying to lift some weights, you know, little guy trying to lift some weights and swimming and riding horses, and, you know, I said, am I fit? And I'm not making this up. I realized at that time, every day for the rest of my life, as I knew it, I was going to do something because I was never, ever going to totally be fit until I'm finished.
Wow. I think that's a champion attitude right there in a soundbite.
Yeah, that was the voice that I got. That's what I heard. And nobody told me that, because where I came from, nobody ever told me that I could do anything. Even the school teachers, no one would say what you could do, but they would tell you what you couldn't do. Like, oh boy, you're not going to do this here. You can't do that. The neighborhood was isolated and closed down, and this is what people thought. But I was blessed to hear that voice say, you can do this. You can do that. And it's been taking me for quite a ride. And, you know, I have good days and I have sometimes part of my day is bad. But, you know, it's going around that corner and it gets good again.
Right. Awesome. That's amazing, because I wanted to play one of the motivational speeches that I found, just like looking for the music. I found some, but a lot of them are kind of war or fight or sport oriented. So I wanted to find something that was more universal of, and I found, just like you said, that I can. It's called I Can, I Will, I Must. Overcoming Any Obstacle. And it's this guy, his name is Eric Thomas. His website is ET Inspires. And I just love his spirit with the motivation. It was great. So I'll play it in 1 second. But at one point he shows a cartoon, and I'll just map it out for you so you know what's going on. There's diamonds on the right side of the screen and two guys on top of each other in tunnels, tunneling towards the diamonds. And one guy on the bottom is really close, like he's got two more chops before he gets to the inside of the diamonds. But he's walking away, like disgruntled and annoyed and frustrated. Meanwhile, the guy on top is only about halfway there, but he's just chopping away furiously at a run with this happy smile on his face, like a giddy little, you know, ha, ha, here we go. And, you know that guy's going to make it. So So that's the cartoon. How about we listen to a little I Can, I Will, I Must? How you feel about that, Jerome?
That sounds real good.
Awesome. All right, here we go.
Man, I'm pumped. I've been reading your post. Some of y'all, you like, E.T., I'm frustrated. E.T., I can't fail another test, E. I can't take another loss. Listen to me. Some of you, I've been reading it. You tired. I feel you. You tired. Some of you scared. Look, some of you hurt. Listen to me very closely. I need you to do me a favor. Listen to me. Don't worry about what's going to happen the rest of this year. Like, don't even give me the rest of this month. Like, flat out. I'm not interested until tomorrow. Like, today, do me a huge favor. Can you just survive today? All right, I want you to say this with me. Because I'm going to give you what helped your boy out, all right? So I need you to say this with me. And that is, I can, I will, yep, I must. All right, look, for us, it's a different TGIM. I just need you to do me a huge favor. Come on, work with me. I can, I will, I must. Are you hearing what I'm telling you? Now, I'm not an English teacher, so I'm not asking you to say this just to be said. Like, I want you to speak life into that thing, whatever it is. Whatever was frustrating you, like, for real, you feel like, E, I can't fail another test. Like, I can't go through another day like this. Like, E, I can't handle it. I can't take it. Listen to me very closely. Say it with me and breathe life into whatever that thing is. We're going to speak life into death right now. Whatever your circumstances are, say with me, I care. Yep, I need you to feel it. I care. I remember when I was homeless, I was like, I can get through this. Listen to me. I will. I will get through this. Woo! I must get through this. Look, I need you to look at that sickness that's going on in your life right now, whatever it is. I want you to say, I can beat it. Yep. I can beat it. I will beat it. I must. I got kids to live for. I got a family to live for. I ain't through yet. My life ain't over yet. Listen to me. I need you to, that test you failed the third time, I need you to look at that test and speak life into it. I went from being homeless to where I am right now, and the first thing I did was, and you better hear me closely, the first thing I did was I said, I can get through this. I can get through this. And y'all got to do me a huge favor. You just got to have that mindset that no matter what you're going through, no matter what challenges you're facing right now, you got to have that mindset that I can get through this thing. I can make it through it. And I made it through. Listen to me. I outlast. Some things you just got to outlast. Every sleepless night, listen to me, every cold night, the winter Detroit and the abandoned buildings and cars sleeping in. And listen to me. I was sleeping all over. I outlasted it. There's some things in life you don't need no degree for. You don't need no money for it. Listen to me. You don't need no support for it. There's some things in life you just going to get through when you tell yourself, I'm going to get through this. This is the TGI where I tell you, you can't get through it. And then second, you just got to outlast some stuff. That's for real. That's some, I done had haters. I done had all kinds of stuff. And I just made up in my mind, look, I might not have been stronger. Listen to me. I might not have been smarter. I might not have been brighter. But I made up in my mind, I'm going to get through this. So we're going to put an image up. And I need you to see this image, right? And when you look at this image, what I want you to see is this is classic of my man. Look at him. He got the two. He hitting. He probably got 998 hits. He got one more. He just got one or two more hits, and all them diamonds gonna come out. And you know why he'll never see diamonds? Look, 998 hits. He had two or three left, and he would have cracked that thing. But you know why he never succeeded, and why most of you never succeeded? Because you keep giving up. Listen to me. He gave up. If you was going to give up, you should have gave up last year. If you was going to give up, you should have gave up 2 years ago. You should have gave up $2,000 ago. Listen to me. You should have quit a long time ago. You done already put in 998 hits. Get some out of it. You finished school. You going to quit now? You finished school and now it's hard because you can't find a job? You should have quit your first class. You mean to tell me you went through 4 years, 5 years of school and now you quit? Now you give up? So I want you to look at this image for me. I'm going to tell you something. This guy right here would have been successful had he never given up. And I'm telling you, some things in life is not about what you think it is. It's just about making up your mind that you are not going to give up. You're not going to quit. And so your boy went from being homeless to where I am now. And I failed classes. Guys, listen to me. Just because you fail don't make you a failure. And just because you lost don't make you a loser. And what I did that most people are not willing to do is I just never gave up. Consistent. I just never quit. All right, so we gonna get out here. I gotta let you go. But you gotta say it with me again. You gotta let me say, woo! I can, I will, I must. Are you hearing me? I can, I will, I must. I leave you with this. I'm not telling you it's going to be easy. I'm not saying that. But it's real simple. E.T., what do you mean? You can get through anything. Listen to me. You can make it through anything if you just say, you say these words. So cut this thing off. I just want you to play your favorite song. Look, look. I want you to look in the mirror and I want you to tell yourself, I am a survivor. Listen to me. And you can get through this. You just got to work a little harder. Right? You just got to press a little deeper. Listen to me. I don't know what you got to do, but I'm telling you, just don't give up and don't give in, and there's absolutely nothing you can't do. So if it was easy, everybody would do it. Hey, but I know something about you. If you're watching me, I know something about you. I know something about you. I know you're not a quitter. I know you're a survivor. I know you're a survivor. If you're watching me right now, I know something about you. You are a survivor. So I want you to get off this. I want you to cut it off. I want you to go in the mirror, and I want you to make the rest of your life the best of your life. I can, I will, I must. It's your boy, E.T.
How'd you feel about that, Jerome?
Whoa, he said so much with so few words. It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
He said my life. Right there in 3-5 minutes, and it's unbelievable because there's a lot of times coming from where I come from that I had to say that, and I always thought all I have to do is take another step, all I have to do is not stop, and a lot of times I wanted to stop, especially when I was younger. I just wanted to, you know, before the gravy came, before I started making a little bit of money and seeing, well, I was lucky to see a lot of things all along, but when I could see these things on my own, the gravy, I didn't feel it as much as I did, say, from age 6 until age 24, you know. But I had to say that a lot. I can, I will, and I must. I really could feel that guy.
Right? Absolutely. I felt the same way. Like, to me, I was like, this is the guy, because his energy is just, if you watch the video, you know, he's just, it's even more apparent. And, yeah, I mean, and that never give up attitude, that's really what I took away from it, too, is, you're right, you just have to, whatever you got to do, to keep it moving. And I wanted to talk about that. Did you want to say something?
No, go ahead. Tell me what
okay.
you want to say.
Yeah, about that never give up attitude. I think that's interesting. Like, that's an interesting thing to explore, because I was thinking about, well, what would my never give up attitude be about? And the way that I do that is to find actually a calm state. Like, if I can find that something that either I can laugh at myself or laugh at what's going on, or at least feel peace with it, when I can find that, then I can move forward and then I don't give up. But without that step, that has to be, like, I have to convince myself that this is a good idea. That's what I do.
Yes.
I'm interested in what you do.
Laughter cures everything. If I can laugh at myself about something that I'm going through, that's good. But sometimes I can't. What I normally do when I'm in trouble is, what I mean by in trouble is, like, I feel like I'm pressed against the wall and I'm afraid to go forward is, I have to stop, too. My best place to go is somewhere where there's green, you know, where there's trees. So take a run or walk.
Grounding.
There's sometimes where I can't run sometimes. And if you've ever gotten up in the morning, I'm an early person. If you've gotten up in the morning, really when it's dark and you go hit some trail or some street, because I've run in streets for years, and while you're running or you're walking along, you're watching the day, the nighttime turn into day, and there's that gray zone, see a deer just jet out into the road, or rabbit, or fox, or
the witching
hour. Yeah, if you see in the streets, you see a couple people walking by holding hands or something like that. There's no other time like that. There's this peace and this calm, and whatever I carry with me that's negative for me that morning, that's gone. I'm
wow.
able to take a step forward. And
yeah, we
I
call that
this.
The... Go ahead.
Go ahead.
We call that the
this.
In-between time. It's the in-between, yeah. that portal time. Interesting. Go on.
Yeah, and I could find this every single day. I can find it if I need it every day. Somehow I put myself in a place to live where it's around me. All those things are around me. And it wasn't by chance, because the place that I live, when I was in high school, I had been in someone's car and had driven by this area, and I looked at that area and said, wow, this looks nice. And then there was another area where my son lives now. When I was in elementary school and junior high school, I lived on a farm a couple of miles from where my son is actually living. And I never dreamt, but I had driven by that place one time and ended up there living. You know, I came from the city, and I was able to not ever forget the city, because I love the city, and especially, you know, downtown Philadelphia or New York. But I can just take myself away from that and just go there once a month or so, enjoy the activities and all. And I put myself in a place where I can feel all those rhythms and vibrations and help put me back into perspective about where my life needs to be for me. And that's how I travel through those hard times. And that's how I shed off. That's how I shed off my junk. You know, I never totally get rid of everything, but I'm constantly working on it. It's just like I work on my athleticism. I work on my thought processes, and it's not so much work anymore. It's what I do. It's just where my life is progressing.
Yeah, I don't think we ever get it done, Jerome. I think we're always working on something, and the sooner we accept that, it just becomes more fun, doesn't it?
It does. It's no longer work then.
Right.
The
way of life.
The biggest work around my job is the people who try not to work end up working harder than those who's actually working.
Right.
I have some buddies who do triathlon. They work pretty darn hard at trying to get to where they want to be. But then there are some of them who they don't work at all. I mean, well, they work, but they don't do enough. And when it's time to race, it shows. It shows. You know, you have to put forward some kind of effort. But it's more fun when you enjoy the effort. If it's not something you enjoy, then Ironman triathlon is not your game. Very expensive. It's very expensive.
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Tell them how long it is.
It's 140 miles. It's a 2.4-mile swim, 112-mile bicycle. Most of the time it's up and down hills or in 90-degree weather or 25-mile per hour wind in your face, and then it's a marathon afterwards. And it's... You know, if that's not your game, then, you know, accept it. It's not your game. And then with your life, you know, some things aren't your game. If it's too much for you, like we said before, if you can't do it, you tell yourself you can't do it, then you can't do it.
Yeah, and it looks like you don't want to do it. Like, I think the I can't do it, it's like, maybe this is not your thing, you know. You know whether that sounds appealing or not.
Right, and you know what, unless you're handicapped, a lot of people that know me think, wow, this guy's an Iron Man, he's an Iron Man. If you're not handicapped and you love the sport, trust me, you can do it. But if you're not handicapped and you don't love the sport, you don't love getting up early in the morning and swimming and running and riding, and then at night you're doing the same thing and you're trying to take care of your family, then it's not for you. You know,
yes.
If you don't have a job that you're willing to put forward your best effort, then you should get a job that you can do that because you spend so much time doing your job. And I spend a lot of time doing triathlon and my job.
Yeah, I think this can translate into a lot of people's lives with being an Ironman. I mean, let's face it, probably most people listening to this and around are not necessarily doing that, but that translates into anything that you're putting a lot of time into. And physically, if you're playing a lot of ball or you're doing a lot of yoga or even meditation, you know, that's your bag. So I think it's important to make the distinction that, you know, everything that you're talking about can totally be applied to anything that we're doing. And whatever you do, as long as you love it, you can do these 140-mile sprints and it doesn't feel like it. You know, it doesn't feel like work. That's a big message. I hope.
And you said it.
Yeah.
You said just what I was thinking. It translates into my everyday life. And you don't have to, like you said, you don't have to be doing Ironman, but whatever you're doing, the same spirit's there. It's there. If you love it and you can take that step, then you push towards that direction of what you're doing with your life. Like, Ironman is not separate from my life. I just want to make that clear.
Mm-hmm.
I think of Ironman as a subculture, but it's a way of living.
It's a part of you, isn't it?
Right. I'm not an authority for everybody out there. I'm just trying to tell you how it works for me. It is meshed in between everything that I do. My job is meshed into that as well as my living with my people that don't do Ironman or has nothing to do physically with it, but everybody that's with me has on some level something to do with it because they deal with me. It's me. Before they came up with the name Ironman, I had that same attitude. So it was easier for me to fit into going out there running and riding and swimming and working a job and trying to keep a relationship. The relationships have suffered a little bit with Iron Man because that was one of those things that I couldn't quite fix because, you know, if you find somebody that do exactly what you're doing, maybe the chances of it working for a while is good, but then there comes a time when you probably get tired of each other. But then if you you find someone that don't do what you want to do, but they're okay with what you want to do, you got to find time for them and not just tire time. And my first 7 years of Ironman, I was a little bit selfish, a lot selfish. Triathletes can be selfish. Then you have to learn, and too bad it took for me to get sick to learn, that it's more to life than just picking one thing that you really like to do and focusing totally on that, because you can't do that 24 hours a day, and it's going to be hard for you to share your life with somebody if you do that. So I've learned from that experience that not to shortchange my relationships. That's part of my Ironman life too.
That's such a great point. That's one question that I didn't think of. You know, how does this affect, especially in relationships? I mean, I've talked about relationships a lot on this show, and the idea of a new kind of relationship that works, and that's interesting. I mean, I think anyone that's doing something that they're really passionate about, there is going to be this mad scientist in the tower kind of a thing going on where this guy or girl is just gone for a while over there doing that thing. It's almost like another relationship that you need to balance with this human relationship. So it's an interesting point, because I think we're all looking to do that. And I think to be free and really to be able to be yourself, all of yourself, and not have to do, you know, yes, definitely compromise. I don't think sacrifice necessarily needs to be in something in a relationship. Compromise is better. And so to balance that.
That's,
go ahead, Joe.
I'm working on that too. I work on that all the time, and I don't think my relationship would work if someone said to me, well, you have to give this up because, then I wouldn't be happy and they wouldn't be happy. So the compromise is much better. And I'm not 100% there yet, but I'm working on it. And my friend, she sees that I'm working on it. So we find some happy time. And that way I can walk away not carrying that load on my head, and she can walk away doing what she does, because she has hobbies too, things that she's passionate about. She doesn't have to worry about me coming there saying, well, look, you stop planting those trees today, let's go somewhere. Before we get to that, we make a plan. We say, hey, next weekend we're going to take off and go somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it works better that way than waiting till the last minute and getting your ears on top of your head thinking, all right, we got to do this. We got, you know, get real rigid about, we got to stop and do this here so we can have some time together. You just got to plan it. And spontaneity is good. Spontaneity is good, but not with the rigidity to say, okay, stop what you're doing. That's not really important. And let's go.
Yeah, the expectations, right? I mean, like, if you want to be spontaneous, then you also need to be okay with the fact that it may be spontaneously turned down, you know?
Right.
No attachment to it. That's part of the spontaneity of it. Do you want to do this? No. All right. You know? Or do you want to do this? Yes. Great. Let's go do that. You know? Cool. Both are cool.
Yeah. That works. I have a lot of younger guys that will ask me about triathlon. And the first thing I'll say to them is, do you have a girlfriend or wife? And if they say yes, then I'll tell them, make sure that they're included and make sure that they're okay with it.
Down with the program, right?
Right. If it's something new, like, see, I've been doing this stuff since I was a little kid, taking off, going on adventures since I was a little kid. So that's me. But for someone 25 years old to come along and say, yo, I think I'm going to do Ironman, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, I got the bug, then I'll say to them, do you have these things? And they'll say, yeah. And I'll say, the best advice that I can give you since you came to me is think about them. This is new to her. This will be new to your kids, and this is going to take away a lot of time from them if you're going to do it well. Now, if you're just going to go out there and you're going to be a weekend warrior, then do the sprints. Do the Olympic distance. You can go out there and have tons of fun. Swimming a half mile, running 5K, to ride your bike 16 miles. That is so much fun. And then after an hour and a half, 2 hours, you're done, and you and your family are taking off from the park where you were and having a picnic or going to the movie or something. Don't go
the
after the big
version.
Game. Yeah. Mm-hmm. If you want to do the big game, you know, it's a long road. I get a lot of young guys that really come up to me and ask me, what would you do? And I know how addicting this sport is. So I give them the truth. And then they can take with it what they want to take. But I've seen a lot of marriages fall and a lot of relationships fall for triathlon. It's a hungry sport. It's a hungry sport. It says, I want you. I want you. And if you can't balance yourself, I got you. It's also very expensive. Don't let anybody fool you. It is very expensive. I think these merchandisers know that people want this so bad. People are looking for something so badly, and triathlon right now is very attractive that people will spend so much money and time on it. Even if they don't really want to do it, they just heard that it was the thing to do.
Exciting, something adventure, some sort of challenge.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Wow. So do you find like a lot of amateurs, like that story you were telling about, you know, the guy that says, yeah, I trained, but clearly did not train enough. What's the percentage of those guys?
I don't know the real percentage of it, but where I live,
that you see,
we have a huge triathlon community where I live. I'd say about 20-25% of the people will talk it and won't
walk.
They won't do the work. And what happens is, if you go out and you have 17 hours to finish the race, I don't know who wants to be out there 17 hours. Do that race. Now, you know, there's some people in their late 60s who are doing that race in 12 hours.
Wow.
13 hours. If it's going to take me more than 11 hours to do that race, I'm done. I'm finished. Now, it did take me a long time to do a Hawaii because I went into renal failure while I was there, and I was such a knucklehead, I wouldn't let them pull me out of the race. I continued on. That was what I'm telling you about me not listening to that voice. And I did it in 4.5 hours after being worked on for an hour and 15 minutes in the tent because I was so sick and I couldn't stand up straight. And they were saying, we're pulling you out of the race. And I said, no, you're not. I said, I worked day and night for 3 years to qualify for this race, and I am going to do it. And I went back home. Well, first of all, I went to the tent, and they tried to give me fluid, and my veins had totally collapsed. And then I went home, and they diagnosed me that I was in renal failure.
Wow.
It's a hard game, and some people just want to talk about doing it. They want glory for doing it. When there's no real glory, and as far as I'm concerned, in doing that race, if you're going to kill yourself or if you didn't get ready for it. The worst thing to do is go out there and not be ready for a race. Just like with those races that are short, I want to go out there and do Ironman, and after the race, I don't want them carrying me away like they almost did last time that I was in Hawaii. I was overtrained for that. I wasn't listening to my voice.
That's a really good point, I think, for all of us to take because, you know, a lot of times we talk about manifestation and, you know, these things, where is the stuff that I'm asking for? And one of the lessons is, well, if it's not here, it's not supposed to be here yet, so chill out. So I'm making the parallel of, you know, there's nothing like being thrown into a situation and thinking you can handle it and even, you know, strong-arming your way into it, and then you find, holy crap, I am not prepared for this at all. And so I think it's something to give thanks to, you know, if you're not, if you don't have the full triathlon happening in your life, whatever that may be, you know, maybe you're saving yourself, clearly you're saving yourself a lot of this pain and heartache. Like you said, like start with something that you can have so much fun with, and it's still going to be quite a challenge. Like all the elements are there, like baby steps, man, baby steps, right?
Baby steps is the word or the phrase. Those are the things we have to do. You know, it's just one step at a time.
Right, right.
It really is one step at a time. And we were talking about how these things just like spread, like a person can do something in his or her life and make waves for the next thing that they're going to do. You know, I really do believe that I'm in certain places because of something that I made some cause earlier. I sent out some vibrations from the way I want to live my life. And as long as I take my time with it and I don't rush, I end up at those places. All those little things that I wanted to do, that I thought that, well, if I was rich, I could do this, or maybe someday I'll do that. And I'm telling you, I honestly put out the best vibrations that I can, and I end up in some of the greatest places. And it's just really, really kind of wonderful that when I step away from myself. Now, if I take myself too seriously, then I could be there and don't even know it. I could be right where I wanted to be and not know it if I'm too serious about myself. But if I step away from myself and look at what occurred on any given day or some endpoint that I was supposed to be at, I freaking have done those things. And as long as I can step back and chill out a little bit, I can feel it while I'm there and I can see it while I'm there.
Interesting.
The people that I'm meeting. Go ahead.
You just told one of the questions I was going to ask about control versus allowing. Like, how did that work out? You totally just answered that about, you know, letting that flow happen. Yeah.
Yeah. It is happening too. None of the kids from my neighborhood would even imagine what I do for work. I couldn't go back and tell them and have them really believe or understand what I do for work. Or if I tell somebody, oh, yeah, I took off and went to France and rode my bike through villas and round castles and up and down mountains and things like that, they would look at me like, oh, yeah, right. Or that I spend a large portion of my life going back and forth to any place I want to in this country, you know, with vacation, skiing 5 weeks a year on the best mountains in Utah and Colorado and in Europe. And I only come from 42nd and Parkside. You know, all those little dreams that I thought I might have when I was watching TV as a little kid, somehow I made ways to do those things. And, you know, we all make choices. I don't have this huge home. I do have a house. And, you know, it's good and all, but I didn't choose to have a great big house and a whole lot of things. But I go a lot of places, and I have the things that I need. I have great people in my life that love me. My kids, I have a son and a daughter, 5 grandkids. Well, yeah, 5.
Wow.
And I love them. They love me. And, you know, how did I get to do all this stuff? You know, it wasn't somebody throwing me a whole bunch of money and saying, okay, here, go ahead and do it. It's something that happened along the way. I found out when I was a young kid that if I make certain pauses, then there's going to be some effect. And I just disrupted the path that my family took. And, you know, it's really tragic, you know, and I just disrupted it. And that's where that whole Iron Man thing developed. That was, it was like, okay, we can do this here. We can do it even though nobody said you can do it. I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful for it. I think everybody gets a lot of shots in life, good and bad. And just being able to get into the ones that are good and go with them is difficult for some people. I've just been fortunate.
Wow. Your story is so interesting. And I'm thinking about the question I was going to ask you is with manifesting your goals and seeing a target, a finish line. I think you've answered a lot of this question. What I've heard you say is, you know, if you have any kind of goal, being a triathlete or anything you're doing in your life, there's an allowance and also listening to that inner voice and pacing yourself and enjoying yourself within the time period that you've allotted to do this. And yeah. It sounds like patience. What would you say about patience? How does that click in?
Patience is one of the hardest things for me to deal with, but it's the best thing for me to deal with. With everything that I do, when I try to jump the gun and try to really, really push a little faster than I should, I get a little ragged. I get a little out of rhythm. And I catch it, or somebody will tell me. My coach is perfect for it. I have a swim coach. Amazing man. When we're swimming, he tells me, Jerome, relax. He says, watch this. He says, relax, swim 50 meters. And he'll time me. Then he says, Jerome, swim as hard as you can 50 meters. And when he tells me that thing in my head, and I start, I get out of rhythm, even though I think I'm going fast. I'm making all this splash, and it's a mess. And then he'll show me with video and with his words. He says, look, you just used all the energy you had. You're breathing like you're crazy, and you used 4 strokes more than you did the previous swim, and your time was exactly the same.
Wow.
What does that tell you? He said, relax. He said, just relax. And when I do that at work, say I'm having a case. I do surgery. If someone sees more blood than what they expect to see, the doctor will say, all right, everybody cool out. Then we have a good case. But if somebody starts, oh, blood, and they start to panic a little bit, we end up wasting time trying to stop the bleeder. It's all patience. You just calm down, find a place where you can be, and the sooner you can get to it, to that place, the better off you are. And for me, sometimes when I want something, I drop my head to the ground and I go after it. Well, I did. But over these chronological years and making some mistakes, I'm learning to stop, take a deep breath, and be a little more patient with myself, and then go on. And I'm okay with it. okay with it. But I am setting some pretty high goals for this year. And I'm glad we're talking about patience because no matter what happens, this year is going to go by, whether I'm in it or out of it. And I just need to be patient and do the right things so that I'll achieve my goal. I will, but I can't get crazy with it. I have to be patient the whole way.
Wow, yeah. Tell them what you're preparing for in May.
Well, in May, I still have to get in a race. Because I have a transplant. I had a kidney transplant. I can't swim in rivers and lakes anymore. So all of the North American triathlon races, I'm pretty much out of them. So I'll either have to go to Puerto Rico or California. I'll have to go to one of the half Ironman races where there's ocean swim. So I need to get through a half Ironman in May just to put it on record. And so that in October, I could go back to my nemesis. And I'm trying to get back into Hawaii, and I'm going to make this my last attempt to do an Ironman because I think it's time for me to do shorter races. But I really would like to do something for the Gift of Life. The Gift of Life has taken me from a person sitting in a chair 5 hours a night doing my own dialysis, having friends come sit with me because to do hemodialysis, first of all, you should be in a hospital, or not a hospital, but in a clinic, but I was fortunate enough to do my own, and I would have my friends come sit with me the whole time during the treatment and working each day and trying to run or swim each day for that whole year. And then along came the Gift of Life and gave me a kidney, and automatically, right after the surgery, I woke up, and I had pain from the scar, but I automatically felt healthier.
Wow.
The renal failure and the dialysis had me so tired. And thank God for, or whatever you believe in, for the dialysis. That helped me. It helped me to go to work every day and to go for a run or a swim. I wasn't doing a run and a swim those days. I was just doing, like, today maybe go for a little run, tomorrow go for a little swim, the next day go for a little bike ride. But I had no other time to do anything else. I got my kidney, and my kidney's been working real well. So in October, I want to give the Gift of Life as much money as I possibly can. So I'm going to go in this campaign to get everybody I know and everybody that I know who knows someone to start getting money together to give to this cause for the Gift of Life. And that's what
wow.
I want to do. That's what I want to do. And, I'm not in Hawaii yet, but I will get there. And I'm not going to go out there and try and win the race, but I will finish before 12 hours or 11 hours. I just want to go out there and give back something, you know, instead of,
wow.
You know, I made a little here and a little there to several causes, but I think this is, you know, this is the cause that's saving my life. And that's what I'm.
Yeah, here at Here Be Monsters, I mean, it's great. We could have you on either this show again or one of our other shows to promote that when you're ready. You know, that could be
okay.
A great help. Yeah, wow, that's so great. This has been so great, Jerome. Your spirit is just, you know, you have a heart of gold, obviously. And it's so nice to hear, you know, when you think of Iron Man, you can think all kinds of things, but I think part of Iron Man, even the character played so beautifully by Robert Downey Jr., there is this heart to this person, and I think that's where
yes.
The champion comes from the true champion, not just, you know, the competitor with some good numbers or whatever.
Exactly. And, you know, I did not even put that into my thought process, but I saw those movies and it was his heart.
Yeah.
And I think it's our hearts too.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Wow. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I think we touched on a lot of really good points that people can take away of, and all the teachers right now are talking about relax. It's all about relax. And I think understanding what it means to relax for yourself while still moving forward and doing what you need to do is a very important message right now, to learn to relax into yourself.
Well, I really do appreciate you having me and having this conversation with you. I really feel like I'm getting to know you, and it's good. It's really good.
Nice. Yeah, Jerome and I are going to do a short video on his preparation and everything that he does and his life story. We're going to film that in a few weeks, so I'll definitely let you know when that's out, you know, a minute and a half or 6 minutes of Jerome's awesome story. So, yeah, great. We'll have you back very soon.
Yes, thank you. Thank you very much.
Cool. Thank you. And so I think I'll play us out with 2 minutes of one of my favorite teachers, Abraham, that comes through Esther Hicks, and it's 2 minutes of her talk on invincibility. She had someone ask a question at the last seminar about, you know, help me to feel invincible. So I will leave you with that. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Thank you, everyone in the archives, for tuning in to this awesome story of how to be a champion. I hope you all feel like champions every day in your life. And peace and love.
I'm finally beginning to get it, that I never get it done and that I cannot get it wrong, because everything that I'm living is causing an expansion, and I can tell by the way I feel whether I'm moving toward that expansion or not. Finally, I'm beginning to understand that it was never about the fulfillment or the manifestation anyway. These things that I want are only my target to focus upon so that I can ride this river of life. I am fulfilled in the knowing that I am expanding, and I am thrilled in the knowledge that I will never get it done, and I am satisfied, deeply satisfied with where I am. I'm thrilled in knowing that I am where I am, and that I'm putting the boat in the water wherever I am, and my knowledge that the stream is flowing downstream, ever flowing toward all that I have become, is enough for me to feel satisfaction in where I am. No more will I nitpick as I measure the distance between where I am and where I want to be. Instead, I flow on this joyous river, and I experience the exhilarating feeling of motion toward my expansion. I can feel that the source within me loves me and adores me and has become the expanded version. And I can feel that there's no remorse or discomfort whatsoever in the being of my source. My source not for a moment looks at me where I stand and compares where I am to where it is and mocks me in the not achievement. Instead, the source within me that is expanded as a result of what I have lived stands in loving appreciation of all that I have become and calls me never-endedly toward it. And now I get it, that that's what life is, that the duality of me, that the source energy that was willing to come forth, that expanded out further, and now the physical part of me that's willing to catch up, I now get my place in this universe. I'm important to the expansion of the universe, and it's time for me to receive the benefit of my expansion. And now I know how.
Thank you, Jerome. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a great week.
That was awesome. Thank you.
Nice. I'm glad you enjoyed it. Yeah. Nothing like a little Abraham for a little inspiration.
Yes, she's good. She's good.
Very good. All right. Thank you. And we'll see you next week.
Okay, good.
Peace and love.
Take care. Peace and love.